Yeah, I don't get this thing.
Okay.
Yeah, it was giving me problems there. Hope I didn't delete the last class. That happened one day on Sunday morning. Chris's sermon. Michael does the sound. And he came home and he says, I think I had a problem today. So I find out later in the week that he actually deleted the sermon. It's like, oh, son. Anyway, well, why don't we go ahead and pray real quick. Father God, I thank you for this last time we have together, Lord, and just the ability to continue to talk through and share about our finances, Lord, and giving those up to you, becoming your stewards with your money that you've entrusted to us. Thank you and praise you for the opportunity to also just fellowship with one another, Lord, and encourage each other in this and other areas of growth. In your precious and holy name, amen. Everybody get the outline? Okay. This is last week, final leg, still referring back to my sailing terms. And I entitled it, The Shore is in Sight. Biblical estate planning. And that has nothing to do with age, by the way. It is. In other words, the fact is, once you begin to get a good grip on finances and the biblical view of finances, recognize that we should be looking to that at all times. Matthew 25:23 is where I started, and this is, I think, what everybody wants to hear. You know, well done, my good and faithful servant. And that's kind of the end goal, I guess, when I said at the beginning that there's a trip we're on, and you're sailing, and you're headed towards somewhere. That's it. That's the goal, to be that good and faithful servant. So the very first thing is, some of these are, we already know the answers, but it's just good to hear them already. Or him again. Who should plan? I thought these little statistics were interesting. The odds are 1 out of 33,000 that you'll die from a foodborne illness this year. The odds are 1 out of 900,000 that you'll drown in the bathtub this year. And the odds are 1 out of 4,500,000 you'll die from a bee or wasp sting this year. But the odds are 1 out of 1 that you will die sometime. So, and I love this verse out of Ecclesiastes, Solomon. All things come alike to all. One event happens to the righteous and the wicked, to the good, the clean, the unclean, to him who sacrifices and him who does not sacrifice. As is the good, so is the sinner. He who takes an oath as he who fears an oath. This is an evil in all that is done under the sun, that one thing happens to all. Truly the hearts of the sons of men are full of evil, madness in their hearts while they live, and after that they go to the dead. In other words, it doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter how righteous you are, you know, all those things, everybody's going to die. It's just part of the deal. So, you know, I didn't think about it. I said in the very beginning of the first class, I wanted to just rather have big circle chairs, but I'm too lazy to, you know, move everything back. But anyhow, the answer to the question is, who should plan? You, me, everybody. We need to make a plan because we will die. It's not this thing that's not going to happen. Let me ask this. I've got this down as a group question. Generally, when people think of dying, what do they think of? And this is somewhat a rhetorical question for me, but I'm looking for a particular answer. I'm dealing with this from actually having worked a number of years doing trust and estate work and wills for people. But usually when people die, what do they think of?
Inheritance,
yeah. That's the big thing.
Okay. What happened to the family leave behind?
Yeah.
House,
that type of thing, yeah. I mean, when you really sit and consider it, then you start thinking through those things. But the problem is, most people don't think about it. They don't like to think about it. They're either afraid of it, or it just doesn't seem like it's a real thing, a tangible thing. And very interestingly, you know, when we would have people come in and do their trusts and estates, and even when we did a trust and estate class, women were fine planning it out. Men did not like to get to that final step. They were willing to come and hear, but they really had a hard time with their with the fact that they were going to die sometime.
Well,
Well, don't if we talk about it, we're going to make it come quicker.
Yeah. Exactly.
Sure, I'm not.
You curse yourself or something?
I think if you ask that question to people, I think the first thing that would come to mind is, well, I'd like to be remembered for. They don't even think fine.
Well,
they think, well, their legacy more than they do.
I think that's a very good point. And I get through that a little bit here, but yes, absolutely. We've come, our society is such, so focused on ourselves.
Yeah.
On who we are and, you know, what we're about. That's exactly right. Many people do think about their future. I don't have it in here, but I was doing research and I actually found several funeral planning services. And they're not planning services for people that need it right then and there when somebody's passed away. They're so that you can plan out your own funeral. Some gentleman spent over $10,000 making a DVD video of his life story for people. One other service actually planned this out for the guy, but you know, he loved ice cream, he loved golf. They had his service on a golf course with an ice cream truck there available for people to get ice cream during the service. I spent thousands of dollars planning these things out, but it was all about them.
Mm-hmm.
It had nothing to do with, you know, a biblical view on what funerals should be. And the other thing is this. I wish I would have brought it, but I saw a illustration one time. And everybody, most guys here have played with Legos or blocks like Legos. I don't know if the ladies have, but you know what they look like. You know, your kids have had them. You've got a block of Legos here and a block of Legos here. And we tend to view things like this. This is today in our lives here, and this is tomorrow in heaven, eternity. And then he took these two blocks of Legos and he pulled them over to get next to each other, and he laid the long one on top and connected them. He said, "That's not true. The reality is, Scripture is very clear that this and this are totally connected. Mm-hmm. The things we do here affect here." Mm-hmm. So all of that comes together and should, as a Christian, we should think that through as we're thinking through the future for ourselves. So that takes us to the next thing. When should we begin to plan? I have a couple little facts here. Pastor performing a baptism was electrocuted inside his church Sunday morning when he adjusted his nearby microphone while standing in the water. And I doubt, honestly, he woke up that day thinking that that would happen. Does that make sense? He really probably had his whole mind on that baptism. A 20-year-old South Korean man had a 50-hour-long video game session, StarCraft, which is not a good video game, by the way. It's kind of boring. And promptly died of a heart attack stemming from exhaustion. Okay? Again, guy's 28 years old and plays video games for 50 hours and he has a heart attack. And I just throw those in there. I don't mean to make a humor of them, but the reality is neither one of those people had woke up that morning thinking, today's the day I'm going to die. Mm-hmm. We don't know when God will tarry. We really don't. It could be at any age, any time. Yeah, we can go with the averages of lifespans and things like that. There's wisdom in that. But at the same time, we always have to consider it's God's will, not ours. Ecclesiastes 9:12, for a man does not know his time. Like a fish taken in a cruel net, like birds caught in a snare, so the sons of men are snared in an evil time when it falls suddenly upon them. Okay? And James 4:13-15, come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go do such and such a city. Spend a year there, buy and sell, and make a profit. Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. Mm-hmm. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do that. And that's what that really is saying is there's a paradigm shift in the way we think. I do this all the time. I say, okay, tomorrow I'm going to take care of that. Or, you know, Tuesday we're going to get together and do this. I very rarely say, if the Lord wills. And what that does in doing that is it shifts our mindset. It shifts the paradigm in the way we think, to realizing He is 100% in control. He is sovereign. It is His will. Right now, I am, this is public knowledge, so I don't mind talking about it in a sense, but it gets a really good illustration for me. I have placed my name in for a particular job, different than the job I have. And it's really interesting because I have the ability, because of the people I knew and in a particular situation, to try to manipulate it if I wanted to. But instead, I've done everything I can to follow the process exactly, procedurally correct, and even make it more difficult for myself at all possible. Not that I'm trying to not get the job, but my whole mindset the whole time has been, I don't want to manipulate anything. So that if it happens, I know it's the Lord. He opens or closes the doors for me. That's, you know, I follow the scriptural principles of honesty, integrity, those kinds of things. But when it's all said and done, it's up to him. And this has been a really good process for me. So if we can, you know, think that way, and that's that last little statement there. God is not there for us. In other words, he's not, you know, a sugar daddy. Instead, we are here for him. We are his stewards. And too many people look at God as if he's there to serve them, as opposed to, you know, us serving him and being his stewards. So the answer to the question, when should you begin to plan? Now. A good steward plans ahead. There's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing morbid about it. My grandfather and grandmother died within a couple of years of each other on my mother's side. And then my grandmother had died on my dad's side. My grandpa died when I was real young. And all of a sudden, my mom, you know, starts announcing all of her funeral plans. Well, she's in her, you know, late 40s at the time, early 50s. And, you know, she's got her plots picked out now. She picked the colors of her casket for my dad and her. My dad didn't like his color, but she didn't care. You know, she thought she was going to live long. I mean, it got to be this humorous thing, but as she did it, what was happening is she'd gone through this whole frustrating issue with her mother's death. It was her father died first, then her mom died, and left no will, no plan, no anything, just passed away. So my mom had to pick up all those pieces and deal for months and months and months. And that was in another state, so it was really hard for her. What she was trying to do was make it easier for us. Mm-hmm. So now if you go to her house, you can pull the back of particular paintings, and you can pull, you know, look at, like, behind furniture. I don't know where she put all of them, but there's three colored dots. There's myself, my sister, and my brother, and we each have a color. So she's doing it that way.
Does
to
she move them if she's.
Well, that's all. Yeah. Here, okay. Yes. Watch Michelle. Michelle, wait. Michelle, what's her number one thing?
The
grandfather clock. The grandfather clock. Yeah.
So you guys, every time you know if you're in trouble.
Yeah, the grandfather. That's it. So I told her. I said, you know what? I'm gonna come over one day when you're not there. I'm gonna move all the dots around. But anyway, you know, she's all good. I have to say, my mom, she's been a Christian since I was five. She really has a grip on God's sovereignty. She understands that she's not afraid, and to pass away, she knows that's just part of life, and she's looking forward to being in heaven at the same time. She loves us. She's got a really good balance on that. So it's been fun to watch. My dad, on the other hand, he just shakes his head. But this another question. When do most people think it's a good time to begin planning their estate?
I think when they lose someone like an older relative, that's when the main reality starts kicking in. We should do something because they left nothing in place.
Yeah, mm-hmm. If you've had to deal with it, it starts to hit you, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Or you go into the doctors and find out something's not quite as right as you thought. And
yeah, exactly. Then
come to a large sum of money.
Coming to a large sum of money.
Yeah. Well, probably along the 15, and all of a sudden you're thinking you're probably going to take care of that.
Yeah, that's true. You know, different events occur and get us thinking. And the other thing is just that if nothing ever happens to that like you, it's usually, you know, age. You age and you begin to say, I'm going to do this. But the percentages are unreal as far as those that are not prepared. It's way over 50%. And it's been years since I looked at it, but at that time I remember being way over 50% of the people had no estate plan whatsoever. No will, no nothing. And that just leaves frustration for people following. And then those that do some kind of planning usually make some, you know, they're okay plans, but they're not the best. They really haven't thought it through. But if you start now, if you begin to consider all the factors, then by the time anything like that could ever happen, you could be, you know, everything's going to be much easier. Especially, honestly, if you have children. That's the big one. I remember only two estates I worked with where there were young kids involved. But those got messy. In both cases, it was called intestate without a will. Mm-hmm. So you got guardianship issues and trust issues, mm-hmm. for the children and all of that. So it's just something.
It kind of goes back to a previous one of these classes too, that it's just something that's not taught. So it's not until it becomes to bear on your life that you start doing it.
That's exactly right. Yeah, no, it's exactly right. It's just one of those things where, you know, we didn't talk about these things just because we didn't. Interestingly, here's an interesting fact. This is from American history. I think I may have said this already. But during the time of the Puritan age here in America, the late 16th century, early 17th century time period, the children, you know, they had dolls just like we have dolls and all that type of thing. But with their dolls came a casket. It was part of the thing that was sold with them. It was normal course of business because death was so prevalent at that time, especially among young children, that in a sense they were taught it. This could happen, you know. So if you don't like your baby dog, go bury it in the backyard, I guess. I don't know what they did with the casket. I'm not sure, honestly, what they did with the casket. But it was sold with it, you know. And that goes with what Chris says. It's one of those things where they were very comfortable with that aspect of life. Where today, we're not. We're taught that we're not taught it, but somehow it comes across that we're immortal. You know, and that's not true.
I think it's good as parents to talk to your kids, because I know, like, when I was growing up, it was never spoken of, you know.
Right.
So never, ever. And then I know before my mom died, I had talked to her about a year in advance as to what she wanted. I made the mistake of not conveying that to my brother. So when she did die and we buried her out here, they were bothered with me, and it came out months later, you know, why did you bury her out here? And I said, because I had talked to mom and that's what she wanted, you know, because where she was going to be buried, no one would ever have whatever really go there. So I said, at least here someone would go to the cemetery. And when I explained that to my brothers really thoroughly as to my mom's wishes, they became okay with it, because they'd go, well, you did spend the most time with her, so you would have known what her wishes were. And since her passing and then my dad dying 6 months ago, we've talked to our kids, and, you know, my husband, like, you know, jokes, he goes, you know, when I die, I don't want to be buried, I want to be cremated. And we're like, you know, when you die, it doesn't matter, because you won't know what we do with you. And we, know, we play around with it, but we have, you know, like, jokingly, we've told the kids, you know, if I die, you know, what jewelry of mine would you like, type thing, where I've never, ever heard of that growing up, whereas now we do it kind of in a plain way, but, you know, like, you know, who wants this, who wants that, type thing. So that later on, at least they know. Because my fear would be sometime me and Mondo would go out to dinner and something would, God forbid, would happen, but we would never come home. And
right.
Then the kids would be, you know, what do we do now? Who do they go to? They go to the state because there's nothing in place.
That's exactly
so
right.
So when we go out, that terrifies me sometimes, because I'm thinking, what if?
Yeah.
You know?
No, that's a very good point. We had, Michelle and I had very, very dear friends. They were kind of like one of those mentor older couples for us when we were first married in Nebraska. And They would fly mm-hmm. separately, mm-hmm. just in case. I mean, they thought all these contingencies through, you know. And he was a pilot. He wasn't, well, that tells you something right there. As soon as I said that, I thought, wow, I never really thought about that before. He was a pilot.
You take the truck, I'll take the car.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, no, that's very good to talk about things and to be honest and just, you know, get the issues out there.
But why are wills so different than a trust?
I'm going to get to that.
Okay.
That's that very nice question. In the practical side of things, it won't be so much today us working through things. I am going to go through the whole estate planning thought process. Mm-hmm. So and we'll address that.
Okay.
So what should you begin to plan for? You know you should. You know it's you. You know you should probably do it now. But what should you begin to plan for? I love this advertisement. Okay. Retirement, Nottaway Farms, Washington. Like people, horses have earned their retirements. They worked hard for us, taught us, given us fun and adventure. Now it is their time to just be a horse. I don't know what they were before, but no more performance expectations. Retirement does not mean just put out to pasture either. Horses, like people, still need to feel connected to others, to have interests, hobbies, like therapeutic riding for persons with disabilities, and to have attention to changing health needs. Like people, their appetites change, their eyesight changes, teeth and chewing ability change, arthritis concern. All testaments to having lived a full and productive life. This is the epitome of humanistic thinking. However, it makes the point, okay? The reality is, when we think about retirement, what do we think of?
True. Not working no more.
Not working, yeah. That's exactly, you know, RVs, not working. I have this great picture, this huge mobile home in my head, you know? Just huge.
Just you and her with this big old giant one just driving and just driving.
Exactly. No, that's my picture, trust me.
No, that's my husband's picture. Because, you know, when we retire, we should get one. I said, no, I want roots somewhere. I want to be traveling everywhere, no.
That is funny. But, you know, or like golf, and more golf. My parents live in Sun City, and I have to say my dad retired early, but he works in the ministry, so it's been interesting to watch his mindset. He's the hardest worker I ever knew in my life, bar none. Okay? And I know there's other ones out there. It's just he was with me all the time. He worked hard. He was working all the time. If he wasn't at work, he was at home working on something all the time. And, you know, now I watch him, and, you know, every Friday is golf, no matter what. You know, he's golfing. And I, in my mind, I really think he's earned it. But he's not just golfing. There are guys out there that he golfs with. That's all they do. And they own that course. They know it. They, you know, every nook and cranny, because they spend so much time out there. That's what their lives are consist of. And that's not what it's supposed to be. Hear my heart. There's nothing, I don't think there's anything wrong with all of it at that particular age, really enjoying some of the fruits of your labors. At the same time, the scriptures very clear on this. Numbers 8:24-26. It pertains to the Levites, and it talked about the Levite priests actually getting to the stage where they would step down. However, they were still involved in the Lord's work after they had retired, so to speak. Luke 2:36-38. Anna was an older woman who continued to serve the Lord faithfully in her old age. And then 1 Timothy 5:6. Talks about the widow who lives for pleasure is dead while she yet lives. In other words, the scripture talks about all of these situations where people have gotten older, and there's nothing in there about them just doing nothing, just relaxing, just enjoying their time. Because again, their lives aren't about them. Okay, it's a stewardship issue, and this is stewardship of time, not necessarily money. It could be stewardship of resources and money, but time as well here. You have... you know, well, think about this for a second. This is what's so encouraging to me when I think about how much room I still have to grow. Moses was 40 when he was called out of Egypt. Mm-hmm. He was 40 years in the desert. He was 80 years old before the Lord used him to deliver the Israelites. That's incredible. I mean, I think, okay, I got 40 more years. I can get this together. You know, that's awesome. But God can use you in His time when He's ready. There's never a time that you aren't a tool of Him. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So it's a paradigm shift again in the way we think about things. We're inundated with this message, and it's not true. Psalm 71:18. Now also when I am old and gray-headed, O God, do not forsake me until I declare your strength to this generation, your power to everyone who is to come. We have a testimony. Doesn't matter whether we're 50, 60, 70, 80 years old. Our testimony can help lead others to Christ. And that's what we're here for. We have an eternity to enjoy, you know, heaven. So, retirement is not the thing, the number one issue you should be planning for. Should it be your funeral? 195 deceased people's ashes will be shot into space in rockets in the spring of 2006, including James Doohan, who played Scotty in Star Trek. This goes back to the funeral, you know, thing we were talking about earlier, about people who really plan their funerals about them. It's just not...
The purpose?
I have no... There you go. That's the point. It's a purpose issue. There
it's
is
environmental.
Hey, yeah, that's right. Environmental.
What about those people that had their ashes thrown out on...
the ocean?
Pirates of the Caribbean at Disneyland.
Yeah. There you go. That was a whole other deal.
On the ride. The lady's going through with a can of ashes and she chucks it out on the ride.
That's so crazy.
Well,
you can get contact if you're interested in the rocket thing.
If you
want to
go
to
outer space.
Kirk. Do you want to come to
the library? Who's the guy that played Kirk?
Captain Kirk?
No, yeah, what was his
Shatner.
Name? Yeah, William Shatner. You know? He's also doing it at Expedia.com or whatever. But again, throwing this out, we've already talked about it a little bit. Again, not morbid. Have you thought about your funeral? In the sense of, I'm not talking about necessarily every little detail, like you want your ashes shot out into space, or you know, the things about you. what I'm talking about is you actually thought about the purpose of your funeral. Mm-hmm. What is it for? Even in that, there's an opportunity. I know I listened to Dell actually speak at his father's funeral. He did an amazing job, And it was a great opportunity to share the gospel. And he took it. I know Rod Shackelford just did his grandfather's eulogy, same thing. And I had the privilege of doing my wife's grandfather's funeral a couple years ago, and I did the same thing. There's an opportunity there. You have, for lack of better terminology, you have a captive audience. You know, you don't know who's showing up, but those people's lives can be a testament to truth and to the gospel. So, and from a biblical perspective, Luke 23:32-43, that's when Christ is actually on the cross. And even in that moment of time, those last few moments, you have two people that he's conversing with. And through that, one of them is saved. So even in those moments, because of good planning, good thinking things through, you can use that opportunity. The other thing with a funeral, you know, you see some commercials for funeral insurance on, you know, late night TNT and all those cable television shows. The reason they have insurance for that is because it is costly. Let me give you this website, www.funeralswithlove.com. Okay? You are able to actually calculate the cost of your funeral based upon what you would like, the desires. But they have one, it's called a simple funeral, it's listed right there. It was $7,293 without taxes. And it was a very modest casket. Caskets by themselves can cost $7,000. Mm-hmm. So if you're trying to work this out for your loved ones and for the people that you're saying you care about and that you're trying to be a good steward for, these are the things you can take into consideration and put money aside for, take care of ahead of time. You can pay these things down ahead of time. Even God provided for his son through Joseph of Arimathea. None of the family had to take care of him. Somebody else did all that process for him. Does that make sense? So, it's not necessarily about planning your funeral. It's not your retirement. It's not your funeral. Both those things, again, can be for God. And the last one that we tend to think of today in our humanistic way is our future. I've got this huge article here. But the bottom line is there's a movement now for cryonic suspension, where you can actually freeze yourself in hopes that someday there will be a time where they can wake you back up, and if you have any particular illness or whatnot, you know, they can cure you. Yeah. I liked this particular thing. I think it says in here, the Alcor Life Extension Foundation, the Arizona company reportedly working to store all or part of former Boston Red Sox slugger. I'm not sure what parts they would be storing. But, you know, if it's not all, I don't know what he'd be missing.
He hurt his head.
Yeah, is that what it is? Okay. There you go. So there, see, you don't even get your own body when you come back. But it's $120,000 for the cold storage job. Although people are competing for the business, and you can get this as low as $28,000. Okay. But the best was David Pizer, this multimillionaire. He has had his arrangements made to have his body frozen in liquid, and he left his money to himself. Okay? Again, this is all the different types of bad thinking out there, the bad paradigm that I talked about earlier. God's way, Isaiah 46:10, declaring the end from the beginning and from ancient times, things that are not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand and I will do my pleasure. It's only God that has that, you know, strength, that sovereign act of will. Men do not. And we somehow allow this thinking to come into our mindset sometimes. Again, I think that's this. I know nobody in here necessarily thinks that way, but when I talked earlier about that, we think of more immortal at times. There is it's a paradigm shift. We're not. You know, God can take us at any time and be prepared for it. The true inheritance, Ephesians 1:11 and Romans 8:16-17. Our true inheritance is from God. That's the true valuable inheritance. It's the gift. If that sermon today was phenomenal, mm-hmm. You know, the gift of grace. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. And that's really what we should be focused on. So the answer to the question, what should we begin to plan for? Plan for God's will. And you may not necessarily know what that is exactly, but you have here in the scripture his principles. And those go to being a good steward of different things, including what's going to happen in the future. Good stewards plan ahead. But let me ask you, what do most people plan for? If it's not for God, what are they planning for?
That's the problem, they don't.
Self. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They don't plan, that's another one.
For their kids.
Their children. Yeah. Most people think through for their kids. And then again, self. Or not at all. Those are the, I think those are probably the three big ones. But even in planning for our children, which I think is very biblical, it's for a biblical purpose, and that's where we miss it. Does that make sense? So if you don't plan, there's an issue. If you're just planning for yourself, which we've looked at, there's an issue. And if you're planning for your children but not through a biblical worldview, there's an issue. Because God will bless, you know, the scriptural type of thinking, the biblical worldview thinking. The others fall outside of that. And that's the last thing here. What is God's will? A, it's an inheritance for our children. That's 2 Corinthians. B, an inheritance for our grandchildren. That's Proverbs 13. C, I put here a faithful friend. A wise servant will rule over a son who causes shame and will share an inheritance among the brothers. It's okay to, if you've got friends that are good friends, solid friends, to consider them family in this type of thing. I've talked about this person before, a good friend of mine. God's blessed him greatly. But one of his, he has family, and his family is estranged from him. They're not saved. And he's really wrestling with this right now, because he's probably about 10 years older than me, so he's starting to think all these things through. But he has a friend who he's grown up with from day one, who's worked by his side in his company from day one. He is truly closer than a brother. And those two talk about the finances, and he left more to his friend than he did to any of his family, other than his own children. Mm-hmm. And that was a very well thought through thing for the purpose of this. He knows his friend's saved. And that money, those resources will go to good use. Where if it's going to the unsaved family members, it won't be. Mm-hmm. And he's thought that through. And I thought that was the first time I ever heard anybody say that. Was about 2-3 years ago talking to him. And as I began to do this study, I found more common. Actually, it was scriptural when I considered it that way. Then proper guardianship for our children. Again, if for those of us who still have young children, this is a big issue. What you said is right. If you don't have guardianship planned for in your estate, the state of California or wherever you live does take ownership of the children. Now, you can have somebody step in, a relative say, oh, there's nothing there, I'll grab them and I'll pull them. That doesn't make anything legal until it's gone through the state. And so at that point in time, if you have another relative over here that's been kind of jerky about things and they're contesting this, it could be a big problem for those kids.
See, that's our big problem, because I figured I wouldn't want my kids to be with anyone in either one of our families.
Well, and that's there's a whole other issue.
I'm hoping that if we do go, my oldest is old enough to take the other.
You know, and that's we have that issue. Michelle and I are the godparents or the potential guardians for a couple of kids, and they're not relatives. I mean, we're not relatives, and that's fine. We're very comfortable with that. And some of it had to do, not so much with family, had to do with being here close to where we are. Their family is way far away. And so they don't want their children to be moved across the country. And they're comfortable with who we are and, our value system. So it's an okay thing. With me right now, I've got siblings, if something happened to them, my kids are teenagers, but they still aren't legally of age, Fortunately, my parents live close by, so. But we've thought those things through. If you haven't, it's very good to do that.
Do you think we should pursue that legally? I mean, have the papers done?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that would be a priority?
Yeah.
Okay. So I know my sister's done it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and particularly if you're choosing somebody outside your family, you need to document the reasons why you would do them, why you would choose them over. You need to have that conversation with people in your family so that they can say...
They're aware.
That, yeah, so not just that they're aware, but even if it's contested later... I mean, it's a huge point in your asset that conversation already took place.
That's exactly
that you spoke to them
about it.
Yeah, so that's exactly right. It's even nice to actually have what John said. You can go to the two, and we have before, go so far as it's an affidavit. Have you ever seen it before? Which is actually notarized. You know, date, time, notarized by a notary. These are the reasons.
Now, are we talking about a trust? Because I know we have life insurance, and I know we've set it up that if, like, say, me and my husband died, I don't know if I've changed it, that they would go to my husband's brother. Well, their lifestyle doesn't conduce. We don't want them there, even though they're not like super close or anything. But that was the plan, because I changed it for my sister to them, because my sister was Catholic, and I'm like, these people, yeah, have changed too. So I'm thinking at this point, the life insurance, I don't know that I've changed it as to if both of us go together.
Who the beneficiaries are?
Exactly. Yeah, because I figure I think we had set it up as a beneficiary would be in charge of the money to distribute to the kids eventually at some point. But I'm thinking we don't have anyone in place for that.
You know, it depends on how the... will you hold that question?
Yes.
Because I'm going to talk about some of those things, and I don't want to get too far ahead. I know myself well enough to get way off, especially in that area, because that I can converse on you with. And this goes to... The next section goes to exactly what you're asking, okay? Remember what the true inheritance is. 1 Peter 1:4, to an inheritance incorruptible and undefiled that did not fade away, reserved in heaven for you. So the answer to the question, what is God's will? God's will is found in His Scripture. Most importantly in that, I've reiterated now twice, remember what the true inheritance is. That is, I think, that in and of itself is a huge shift in the way people think and how they deal with their assets at the end of their lives. Okay? Now, this goes to the actual how you accomplish His will. This is the 6 T's of estate planning. First of all, you need to think about the transfer. You have 4 choices. You can leave your wealth to your heirs, you can leave your wealth to charity, or you can leave it for taxes and expenses. Okay? So basically the government's getting it.
I don't have enough. It's so nice.
Or all of the above, depending on how you do your estate.
Wait, what did you say the choices were?
Oh, leave your wealth to heirs.
Charity.
Leave your wealth to charity. Or leave it for taxes and expenses. In other words, the majority of it's going to go to taxes and expenses because you haven't planned ahead.
Yeah, and by heirs, you don't just mean like family. You
no,
just
I
mean
do
other
not.
People.
That's correct, absolutely. When considering these choices, consider the fact God owns it all. You're a steward anyway. Principle 2 is that spouses should be unified on these things. Okay, this is one of those issues again. Couples get to talk, and it helps them grow their relationship. Many times, you would be surprised how many times spouses don't agree on this. Number one, and I will tell you that this is my personal opinion, but I would tell you that the biggest reason for not agreeing at this point in time in our civilization, in our society, is because of the tremendous amount of blended families. This becomes a real point of contention. Who's more important, why? As John said, does it have to be your family members? No, it does not. Heirs are whoever you choose to leave it to in your will. Now, I will tell you this as well. If you choose not, or you fail to have a will, your heirs, by legal definition, are your blood relatives. Mm-hmm. Unless there are none, and then the state takes it all. So that's why you can lose it all. If there's nobody there that you're related to. And there are a few people out there like this, that they just their family is real limited. And depending on their age, they could be the last, and the state gets it all. Mm-hmm. So, just consider that. And then last, never transfer wealth without wisdom. And a great, great, great story, true story on this. Just read about John Paul Getty and the wealth he had. It's massive, just massive. But look at what his children did with it. It's sad, you know, and the Lord doesn't need that wealth to do His work, but the point in that is that if you have wealth, it doesn't matter what amount of dollars that is. When I say wealth, I mean it could be you have $1 to your name, or you could have $1 million to your name. The way you choose to, you know, be a steward of it at the end, just as much as being a steward of it today, speaks volumes of who you are, and the Lord can use either. Just as effectively, because He's God. It's all His anyhow. The treatment, this is the second T. Should you treat your heirs equally? Are there unique circumstances to consider, such as hardship for one or a great blessing for another? And is this a matter of fairness or justice? And this, just a hypothetical. Two children. Everybody says, that's easy, 50-50. But what if, you know, from this point in time, Lord blesses me and I get really rich, and I have bazillions of dollars to give away. And then, but the reason I got that way is because my son and I decided to open up a business together, and so he owns 50% of that anyway. So he's got bazillions anyhow, of his own, in other words. But my daughter's chosen to go in the mission field, and she has very little. Comparatively, I'm talking about just monetary terms. I'm not talking about the spiritual value. Okay, what would seem, what we say fair is 50-50, regardless. What would be just, maybe, is considering the fact of what she's doing, what kind of work she's doing, not just for her, but the actual mission field she's in, where her heart's at, and, you know, leaving 90% to that and only 10% to my son, and telling my son ahead of time, you need to know I love you just as much as your sister. I've been blessed to be with you, work with you side by side, but this is for the mission work. Do you understand that? And at this point in time, I think my son would say, yes, I don't know about the future. But, you know, especially when that money's getting divided. It's interesting to see how greedy people get at that point in time.
Sure.
But at least that's the... Does that make sense of the concept? Mm-hmm. When you're talking about fair and equal, some people have children that are divorced or have suffered hardship, while they have other children that are doing fine, no problems. Again, what John said, you have, or the example I gave, you've got friends that you know you could leave it to, and they will use it for a biblical purpose versus... You know, children that won't, or heirs that won't. That's just one of those things to consider. A biblical worldview is a just worldview. It is not a fair worldview.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The third thing, timing. Capitalize on the asset's use. Okay? Capitalize on the asset's use. By you, by others serving the kingdom, or by your heirs. In other words, going back to that example I gave of my daughter being in the mission field, okay, I might find it might serve better to go ahead and give her that money as a gift, knowing that it's going to go to the mission field way before I pass away, okay. And depending on gift tax and all those other kinds of things, it may even be wiser. It just depends on how this works out, but. I know that there's a certain, let's just say they're trying to build a school for these children in Africa. And it's a school where they'll learn the regular, you know, reading, writing, arithmetic, as well as the Bible. Well, instead of sitting on that money, hoping that something better will come along, you know, it's a wonderful opportunity to go ahead and give then. And that's what this means by capitalizing the asset's use, whether it's for you or for your heirs or for serving the kingdom. That's what that means. It could be paying for, you know, something for your children, a particular operation one of them needs or whatnot. You know, my parents were really good to us in that they gave us early inheritance already. I'm only 41, and my brother and sister are younger than me, but it was all to help buy houses, you know, to get us started. And that was really, it was great. A great use, great thinking. So just, you know, that's one of the other deals. Then decide to transfer the asset for use. Okay? Once you have figured out how to capitalize it, transfer it. Okay? Whether it's now or in the future or it's a deferred. Three, avoid manipulation and being the manipulatee. Okay? I'm a person that, you know, I don't like being manipulated anyway, so it really doesn't happen that much. Because I just can't stand it. However, the flip side of this is I'm very good at manipulating. So, I know that that's a weakness. I have to watch for that in myself, in my heart, in the way I do things, the way I approach things. In this particular area, it is very interesting to watch family dynamics, especially as things begin to play out. People's feelings get hurt. They begin to be, you know, suspect of one another things. And it's just dumb. And this is usually with non-Christians. But you know what? Christians are sinful too. We're just as sinful, just like Paul said to say.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really hard. What John said is probably one of the best things you can do is, and it's down here, it's talking about talk as the last point, but have those discussions ahead of time. Mm-hmm. So everybody's very, very clear as to what's happening and why. It's not just one of those things where because I say so. If you say that, you're leaving that doubt in there. You really have to explain why. And that's an okay thing to do. It's part of being a good steward with God's tools. And D, title. Once the title of the asset is transferred, the decision is done. It's irrevocable. Wave goodbye. You know how there's like buyer's remorse? There's also giver's remorse. I've seen it happen. You know, people give something and then later they almost want to get it back, you know? They want to take it back. Yeah, the Indian giver.
You mean like I decide to give the title of a car to someone now before I die?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay.
In fact, that's a very good illustration because there was a ministry in Arizona and they were given a vehicle for the ministry's use. The ministry determined that that vehicle would best be used by giving it to one particular employee to use because that particular employee had a lot of traveling that was completely work-related. Okay? The person that gave that was very, very offended, wanted it back. It caused a lot of problems. There was no bad intention on anybody's part at any point in time. There was no misuse of that. But you know what? Even if there was, at that point, so what? You gave the thing to honor God. What the person does with it on the other side is completely different. It's like, okay, same thing as the people that are asking for money at like grocery stores and whatnot, or you know, outside of 7-Eleven. I had one of the funniest experiences. We were in Los Angeles. My boss and I, we were traveling, and we stopped, and I got the last particular kind of juice. I think it was mango juice. So we were drinking juice. And my boss was upset because there wasn't any mango left. So he got some kind he didn't like, really. We walk out, the guy's, you know, begging. And so my boss gives him that. And so we get in the car, and we both watch him drop it in the trash can. And I don't know, he didn't like it either. Or what? My boss, I heard about this for 2 hours. But the point wasn't the fact that he did that. The point was that there was the heart to give. Does that make sense? So that's what all this is about. It's irrevocable. It's done. Let it go. If you really did it for God, it doesn't matter what they do with it. That's up to them now. And that's a huge, huge difference in the way most people think today, because we like to have some type of string attached. We like to say, remember that time I gave you that thing? Well, I was wondering. Yeah, it's gone. Okay.
And by this, you're saying it's okay to change our will, but don't tell people you're going to write them out of your will.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah, exactly.
It's perfectly fine to change the title, to transfer the decision.
Oh, absolutely.
It's not finalized.
That's exactly right. Because it's not done yet, but once it's done, and that's what John's saying, once it's done, it's done. But your will can be updated, changed, circumstances can change, and that's good stewardship. That is really good use of, you know, the time God's given you to make those changes. But once it's done, it's done. And I think this will really affect a person mostly when they decide to give things away ahead of time to try to limit taxes or you know, costs or whatnot, or to just go ahead and help somebody now. And then they get all tense about it because what really happened is, think this through. If that's how they feel, they never really gave it. Mm-hmm. There's something they're still holding on to.
And shouldn't you just give it back?
Because
it encumbers you.
If for the person that's given to?
Yes.
You know, that truly...
Because it really encumbers you, and so it's easier just to give it back. Because I'm not being a steward in your eyes for what I want, you know? So I'm not pleasing you. I might be pleasing God, but I'm... You know what I'm saying? Here, then you have it back.
I guess you have to think that through. Let me give you an example. Somebody gives me a piece of property over in Africa to use for a mission. I build it. It's for God's use. It was given to me. Okay, and then they come back because they're mad at me because I'm not using it now for that mission, so to speak. Okay? I mean, I'm not using it for what they wanted. Maybe they wanted a wildlife preserve because they like animals or whatnot. And I could really care less. And so I'm just teasing. I like animals. But just not cats. But so now all of a sudden they're frustrated about this. I have the two choices. The one is, yes, give it back. That's one choice. I can just say, you know what, fine. If this is the way that you feel about it, and if that is the relational issue, that's the major issue there, and through that you can be a witness to them, great. My problem is, though, I've created a mission on that particular piece of property. Now it affects more than just myself in doing that. Mm-hmm. So that's where you have to, I think, weigh out some of those things. You are looking at the nature of the relationship of the person that gave it to you and we being a witness to them, but you're also looking at if that land's being used now at that point in time, the gift, whatever it is, anything. Like the ministry that had that car, we advised them not to give it back. It was given. The man that was having such a frustration, was such an irritation with it, he had to be counseled on the mm-hmm. fact that he was not following scriptural principles. So, and this is where it worked. He was already a Christian. He was just being a sinful Christian, which we all are. But that particular area, he was holding on to. So he had to be counseled. Hey, you're a brother. You should know better than this. And that worked out okay. It just took time.
Well, it truly is a matter of the heart, you know.
It's but exactly.
It's where, you know, how do you get to that heart? Is it easier to, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly it. So those are some tough decisions when those things come. But reality is, Martina, if I think that if somebody really, I have to ask one or two questions up front. Is that person saved? If they're saved, then it's a whole other story because they should be confronted about the way they're not giving it away. If they're not saved, then I would at least consider what you said. And that's my personal opinion.
Yeah. And if there's no other people involved. I mean, like there's nothing on the line
right.
happening.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Do you have anything to add to that?
No. See, really where they kind of cross, that is really no longer really asset planning. You're now turning that into a tithe, and it's where tithing rules apply at that point in time. If you're giving something for a ministry or something like that, to me it's got to be viewed as a tithe at that point in time. It's no longer part of your asset plan.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's a whole other good point.
Yeah, that's...
So I was just going to say expectations are ugly because often they're unstated until afterwards. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they want you to enjoy it, you know, and spend it on yourself. And if you use it otherwise, mm-hmm. you know, it's really tough. And family's mm-hmm. the worst at that.
Yeah, so. It is. It's true. So and that goes again back to what we've already talked about several times, which we'll end with, though, is talk, communicate. Have good communication about things ahead of time so that you can avoid many of the frustrations that come up with any relationship as communication. Estate planning and all that is part of that as well. It's amazing how much frustration somebody can die or somebody can cause even after they're dead, you know, truly, that could have been avoided. And then this goes to the actual tools that you use, okay? So I just want to cover some of these. You can die intestate. That means no will or no trust, nothing at all. Okay, intestate. That's number one, intestate, yeah.
Can you spell it?
Yeah, sure. I'm sorry, yeah.
Spell it as you'd like to.
Phonetically. Phonetically, yeah. Phonetically. I-N-T-E-S-T-A-T-E, intestate. Okay, no will or trust, nothing. Now, if you do that in California, you still have a will by law. They've created one for you within the law. Okay, half of your separate property is placed in a court trust for children, and the spouse is restricted from it. Okay.
You want to clarify what separate property?
Yes, I will. Yeah. In California, it's a community property state. Okay. So Michelle and I are married here. And we go out now in California as we're married and we buy a home. It's community property. We both own it, community-wise. Okay. Separate property in California, and I'm getting this down to the basics, is if I had a rental house or a vacation house before we got married, whether in California or whether Oregon or Texas or anywhere else, that's separate property. It was separate before we were married. It stays separate all the way through our marriage unless I actually go through the process of deeding it to her, putting her name on it. Okay? As we're married, my parents die, and they leave me an inheritance, you know, their son, Scott. But they don't include Michelle. Not that they're being rude. It's just the way it happens. That money is considered separate property so long as I take that money and I put it in an account and I keep it separately. from everything else. As soon as it begins to commingle, it loses the separate nature. You can no longer... Now, there are cases where they're actually able to go back and they'll trace, check by check, to say, no, it's separate. Here's what I did with it. Okay, he's right. It's separate. Okay, so there's separate property and there's community property. So what they're saying here is, if you have no will, it's your separate property that's divided in half. Okay, and then placed half of the kids, half of the spouse. Because they would have assumed something like that from you. Yeah, exactly. After. When it's all said and done, yeah, there's a lot taken out. Okay? Separate trusts can cause problems if illness, accident, educational needs arise. Okay? And what this means is the court trust is what I'm talking about. If you have problems in these areas, okay, you can't get to that money. So what you've done by dying intestate is you've basically tied the hands of your spouse in a way. Okay. D, all 100% of assets will be given to a child at 18. Now, okay, I don't know about you. I love my children very much.
You should be excited.
Yeah, exactly. I love my children very much, but when they hit 18, they are not going to be able to handle with great wisdom, you know, all the money that they could be left with. So, but under law, by law, that's what happens. So let's just play this out. I'll just use Michelle and I as an example because I don't want to offend anybody else.
Use our cousin who got like $1 million from his parents' death at 18 and how he became a gambler. And
that's true,
lost
actually.
His wife,
yeah. We do have that's a very true story. He got over $1 million. His family had land in Texas, was it?
Mm-hmm.
And so he got it, and that's exactly what he did. He gambled. He squandered. I mean, it is the perfect prodigal son story, only he has not come back. He just didn't have the wisdom. Honestly, he hadn't been taught. His parents had died. He's living with his aunt and uncle. This isn't to make excuses for a sin. But think this through. This is the things that the Lord allows us to plan for that we don't. So his parents have passed away when he was younger. He's living with his aunt and uncle. They're not saved, so they're not teaching him any type of responsibilities in this particular area. They themselves have major issues. And so then when he gets the money, what is he going to do? If I was 18, at that point, I know when I was 18 what I would have done with the money, and I would end up just like him. You know, it's just one of those things. Very few 18-year-olds today can manage this. If no parent survives, the court decides custody, which can lead to foster care. Mm-hmm. And that is, honestly, that is the last place you want your children.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And an F, all of this can result in high legal costs and court costs. Out of your state, attorney's fees 5% of the total estate. Court costs 8% of the total estate, and taxes can be over 50% depending on the net worth of your state. Okay? Now, this is why, I will tell you this, this is why attorneys, especially in small towns, do not do trusts. Because they know that as those particular age groups begin to pass, there's very few attorneys in a small town. They're nice, they're kind to everybody. They're making 5% on every single person's estate. 5% of, you know, $100,000 is a nice little chunk of money for doing paperwork. That's because that's all it is for the attorney. Most of those things aren't contested. So they'll tell them, absolutely have a will, you need a will. They will not push a trust.
Mm-hmm.
Because even with a will, you have to have an attorney. So you're losing that 5%.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And that takes us to a will. Now, if you don't have anything at all, a will is much better than nothing. Absolutely. Okay? It is a legal document that disposes of all your assets. It does not avoid probate or estate taxes, though. Mm-hmm. So those that 5% with the attorney, the 8% with the court costs, and then the 50% taxes, depending on what your net worth is,
so
that
is
all...
Is there a place to find out about estate taxes to know, like, levels?
Yeah, absolutely. You can actually go online and type in California estate tax percentages, and it'll give it to you. Much of this, and I would tell you now, much of this, unless you're just really, really afraid of the internet and really, really afraid of making mistakes, most of this you can do yourself today. The internet has made things so friendly, and there are so many different kits out there that are good kits for wills and trusts and whatnot. You should not be afraid to do one on your own if you think that, you know, spending $500 or $2,000 on attorneys is a waste of your money, or you just don't have it.
LegalZoom.
Yeah, LegalZoom. Yeah, that's it's a great one.
Yeah,
it really is. Yeah, it's a good deal,
that.
Huh? It really is. But a will does not encompass property automatically paid out to beneficiaries. Okay, In other words, if you have your insurance policies, okay, that's separate. So if you had in your will, you thought you wanted to do something with these insurance policies, they may not be included in that.
My sister, her was married 6 months, her husband was killed unexpectedly, and he had never changed his insurance policy that he had given to his brother, who hadn't spoken to him in 8 years.
Yeah.
And his brother kept it all.
Yeah, that's exactly a great story. Great, great, great illustration. That's true, though.
So right now, with
and they had a will that said, I give you all, and didn't cover that.
So right now, we don't have a will. We have his life insurance that, you know, he's already instructed me, okay, if I pass away, pay off the house. Okay, I already know that's what he wants to be done, and I'll do that. But without having a will, this can still go back to number one, where it goes into the state.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's, yeah, it's totally different.
I'm like,
I think
terrified
she's
now.
She's got a beneficiary stated on her insurance policy.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Because of insurance, it's either if you
No, that's a beneficiary issue. No, you're that's okay right now. You're fine.
Okay,
right
but, then the
however,
but then the property, we don't have mortgage insurance.
That's one issue. The other thing is if you both pass away, there's a that's the bigger issue.
So then it kind of reverts back to this example
yes.
number one.
Yes. Sorry, yeah.
Okay.
And if there happens to be any separate property out there, those kinds of things. Okay. California law allows you to disinherit a spouse or a child. Okay, just that's I threw that in there. I'm not sure why I threw that in there. But just in case you want to know. You know. So Chris is getting on your nerves. But, you know, now here's it. But this is what's interesting. A lot of states do not allow that. You are not allowed to disinherit a spouse. You can... you can limit, but you can't disinherit. But you I will tell you this. I don't think anybody here is going to do that. But if you ever come across this, you have a family member that does or whatnot, even to do that, it's still, it's like what John said, you're going to have to show them ahead of time why. What was that really intended for? What happened? You know, what was the means for the reason for this? Okay? In the event both spouses die, a will allows appointment of a guardian for minors, children. This can still be contested, by the way. As well as a trustee for the children's estate. This too can be contested, but not nearly as strongly as the guardianship. In other words, a will does allow you to create the guardianship for your child or children and the trust, the money part. Okay, the trust part for the children usually is solid as long as your will is good. You need to know, it doesn't matter what document you're talking about, the guardianship for the children is always, always, always contestable. For instance, let's say we decided not to leave my kids to my parents. And we left them to friends. My parents can step in, and they can fight that. And they have a good 50% chance of winning that because of the grandparents. Unless, like John talked about, unless I have left a very specific, detailed reason. And again, I think an affidavit is the best as to why. And then the court's looking and going, no, this really is their will, and they really had good reason, so we're going to stick with this. Unless something pops up where we see this is a bad situation. Okay, so I don't want to leave you with the impression that just because you put into your will or your trust there's a guardianship, it is 100% ironclad solid. Okay? And last thing, probate court usually takes at least 9 months, sometimes up to 2 years. I had a case that went over 2 years. Yes, you are not kidding.
The worst state in probate.
I know, I'm going to tell a story here in a minute because I've been working with a lady now for over a year and a half on one. Okay, and it is the simplest case you'd ever hear of, except for two things. Then finally, the trust. Okay, and I'm talking specifically an A-B living trust, and this is a husband-wife trust. Okay, you need to know that when you make a trust, A-B trust, it doesn't matter what state it is right now. They, as the A-B portion, in other words, A-B. Let's say that's just pretend it's husband-wife. For it's just easier to explain. They and the B are still alive, so it's revocable. At any time, you can say, you know what, we don't like this idea, we're pulling the trust away. We're redoing it. Okay? It's revocable. As soon as one of the spouses dies, though, part of that becomes irrevocable. So that's what you just have to do. Now, there's nothing bad about that. You need to know there's nothing wrong about that. It actually is still better, much, much better than a will. Because what you're doing is you're protecting your assets. They raised the amount, I can't remember what it is right now, but between a husband and a wife creating an A-B trust, you're able to protect well over $1 million. Is it $2 million? That's what I thought. Okay, I knew they'd raise it. It's yeah, I know. They raised it. I just don't, I haven't followed the law specifically on these issues anymore, but I've done it enough that I remember those things.
Why does it cost so much to get a trust made?
Because you're... Okay, let me explain something. A little bit back up. I'll explain it. I will answer that question.
But then also, I've seen where I will work at a credit union, people come out with these big, giant leather binders. I'm like, oh, it only cost me $1,500. I said, it was just for that folder, you know? I've had people come in and said they paid $600, you know, and they got a little folder, but they got what they need. So I'm thinking, why do they charge so much? But I'm thinking from intestate to trust, I'm like, it's because all the fees you would have been paying here, paying for the book.
Right. No, and it's not even, right? It's not nearly as much either. Let me get to this real quick. Because I want to answer that as we go through it. So you can significantly reduce or eliminate estate taxes through this, okay? In other words, no estate taxes or less taxes because of that $2 million, you know, cap. A couple can avoid probate, the 9 to 12 month delay, as well as possible future need for a conservatorship if incapacitated, okay? So you don't have 9 to 12 months for things to get done and taken care of. You can avoid probate and the attorney's fees that go with it, the court costs and the executive fees. So you're talking 5 to 8% for each of those. You're talking a good percentage of fees that you're avoiding. And that goes to that question. Even if I charge $2,500 for a trust right now on an estate that's worth, you know, $3-4 million, my 5% is going to be way, way more than that if I do just a will. And that's what I'm saying. That's why attorneys in small towns tend not to push towards trust, because they know they're limiting their fees in the future. Okay, and then the taxes, you take all that out, you're talking a significant amount of money you've actually saved by paying that $2,000 up front. Mm-hmm. That's why the trust is a valuable thing. But, again, I would tell you, what did LegalZoom cost for that?
With the title transfer for the house, it was like $600.
Yeah, so $600, okay, on the internet, you can do all this stuff yourself. It takes you all the way through it. They're very good. They are, those things are recognized by law, by the courts, if it pops up, okay? And now what John will be able to do, well, I'll get to that in a second. Sorry. Keep getting ahead of myself. The couple maintains a revocable trust. That's what I was talking about. The trust can be canceled completely if they want, or amended in any way they wish. In other words, you have it listed up front that you want to give X amount of dollars to this person. Well, things change. You can change that. People think that trusts are not changeable. They are, so long as one of you is still alive. So that's the same thing as the will, basically.
Additional fees for making changes during the thing, or just...
Depends on how you're doing it. If you're having attorneys do it for you, yes. If you're doing it yourself, no.
Other than... It was like 5 years of free changes.
Mm-hmm. See, there you go. That's great. And then you got... You had to pay for a notary? Did you have to pay for a notary?
If I didn't know one, yes.
Yeah, okay. No, that's a good point. There are you have to have these things notarized, but, you know, even that, you know, I had something notarized when we first moved here at one of those mailbox, et cetera, places. I think it was $10.
That's the most they can charge.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, there you go. And then last thing here, the trust must be activated, okay? Now, this is what I wanted to tell you the story of. I have a client, not client per se, but it's somebody I've been helping. Here's what happened. About 7-8 years ago, they created a trust, okay, for their mother. She was older, but she had a significant amount of property. But what happened is that already before they created the trust, all the property was in both the mother and the daughter's name. There were two brothers, very estranged, so everything, the mom basically on purpose put things in the mother and the daughter's name because of the estrangement of her sons. So when she passed away, it was just a natural changeover of property. Okay? They had this trust. But they never put anything in the name of the trust. They never put the house in the name of the trust. They never even opened a savings account in the name of the trust. If they had just opened an account in the name of the trust, it would have activated it. It would have made it alive. But they didn't. So, unbeknownst to this lady, her mother had had a relationship with a man for several years, off and on, during this time period that in her latter years. But the daughter never knew it. So, 2 years ago, she gets a letter from an attorney in New Jersey saying such and such a person died, and such a person only has one heir. And that person happens to be your mom. And there, so she, her mom was left over $250,000. Okay? The problem was, And so she's all excited. She's going to go put it in the name of the trust. She talked to me, put it in the name of the trust, so on and so forth. At this time, I'm assuming the trust has been activated. Mm-hmm. She comes back to me 2 days later and says, I can't open up the bank. I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, they told me I had never had anything in the trust. So explain to me what you did. Well, that's what she told me that story. I said, this trust never is alive. It doesn't work. You can't use it. So now they are paying attorney's fees mm-hmm. in California and New Jersey. They're paying taxes in California and New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And that, what she thought was a large amount of money, has been whittled way down. Mm-hmm. And it's been 2 years, and she still hasn't been able to close it. So that is just one of those things where, had that trust honestly been activated with even a checking account, it would have been a simple transfer of one check into it. That's it. Done.
To show that it existed?
Hmm?
To show that it existed.
Exactly. So that's why it needs to be activated. So just making the document in and of itself isn't enough. And that's where also some of the attorney's fees come in. It's about $500 for straight, $600 for straight paperwork. You know, I've done them for just the straight paperwork for about $600, $700. But I will not do any of the other work afterwards because I know how long it takes and the time it takes to go and transfer your deed from your house, your quitclaim deed on your house, and to put that in the name, your name or the name of the trust, I'm sorry, to begin transferring your property, your cars, your stocks, your bonds, everything you want transferred into the name of the trust. That takes time. And
so
usually sometimes 6-7 months.
So once you have a trust drawn up, then that's when you would do property and changing
yes.
all that.
Yeah, because that's when you're actually, those documents you're seeing them bring to you, they're actually showing that person, here's the legitimate trust. It's a notarized document. It exists. It's alive. Okay. And then lastly, upon the death of the spouse, the trust splits into A and B. In other words, that is what I talked about before. The irrevocability ends for at least the portion that goes in, it becomes part irrevocable and part revocable. In other words, the person owns a portion just as if they would if they passed away. But because the trust was created ahead of time, has never changed, the law assumes that then it's an irrevocable portion. Okay? Now, along with a trust, now this, you can have these particular tools with a trust or with a will. Mostly they go with a trust because a trust encompasses a whole plan for your life, in a sense. Okay, you need a health care power of attorney, and that's about a 10-page document, maybe 8, depending on the size of it. But the bottom line is this: if Dell were to have some health problems and he were incapacitated mentally, okay, he could fill out this power of attorney for Jody to actually. Sorry.
No,
huh? Oh, yeah. You know, I've got two Jodys. That's why I just said it. Sorry. Like, wait a minute. Yeah, Jody. Okay. So he has to fill out a piece of paper for Jody to take care of him all the way through. She can make all the decisions for his health. Mm-hmm. And that's legal. If she doesn't have that, then the doctors mm-hmm. and other relatives could contest her all along the way. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, it can kind of get sticky. In fact, my father had a heart attack, the very first thing, they didn't care about his health. They wanted to know where his paperwork on this stuff was. And so he didn't have any. He has it now. But, you know, they were looking for this kind of stuff because they didn't want any legal issues to pop up, especially here in California. Then there's a living will. And that is your writing out how you want things to happen in the event that, you know, you end up on a machine of some sort, bottom line. And it can be very, very specific. I don't know if anybody has ever seen an episode of Seinfeld. But there's one where Kramer is, he watches a movie and he sees, you know, that this woman is in a coma. And he's like, wow. He goes, this could happen to me. So he goes and he doesn't want Jerry to do it because he thinks Jerry's too soft. He doesn't want George to do it because he thinks he's too rational. So he goes to Elaine and says, I think you're the one that can do this for me. So they have this scene of them sitting down with the lawyer, and they are going through, you know, example of possible circumstances that could occur, where, you know, what decision are you going to make here? And, you know, Elaine's like, you know, rip it like a lawnmower. She's talking about the plug, you know. and he's getting a little nervous. So anyway, so they go. It's a great scene because the reason it's great to me is just because the legal aspect of it. The best part, though, is that you don't know this until towards the end. He never finished watching the movie. And so, at the end of the movie, she comes out of the coma. And he's like, wait a minute, this changes everything, you know? So, because, yeah, exactly. No, so the living will, though, gives you that opportunity to state this is what your desire is. You know, you don't want this, you want that. And I'm not going to get into the ethics of it right now because of the reality of it is there's a, I don't know necessarily that there's a particular reason to do that at this point in time. I like to argue it, but, you know, this isn't the time or the place. You just need to think those things through, okay? Because you can have this. You can have a situation where somebody is on a machine for a long period of time. And that puts everybody that's involved outside of that into a real awkward situation. So what do they want? That's why you look at this. This is still a wisdom issue, okay? And then last thing, it's not the last, a pour over will. Okay, in a pour over will, imagine this. Imagine a pitcher, okay, and you're pouring it. That's what it just. That's why it's called that. If you have a trust, that's supposed to include all your property. But let's say something happens to you, and you have this RV. You bought it on this particular Tuesday. You know, Friday, both of you are in an accident. You're killed, and you've got this RV out there now that's not part of the trust. What happens to that RV? And it goes through estate still because it wasn't part of the trust. So that's when you get a trust, you need to start thinking about how you purchase things. Purchase things in the name of the trust, not personally. But if in the event there's anything out there, property-wise, wedding rings, you know, jewelry, furs, silver, I can go through the whole list of things. If anything was failed to put in there, it will still go through estate, but it will not be nearly as costly. And the assets of that, when it's all left and over, won't go to an individual. It goes back into the trust. That's why it's called pour over will. It's like a cover all for everything. Does it make sense?
And isn't that for like 10,000 and over? The estimated value, garage sale value.
Garage sale value, yeah.
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 Yeah, I get a whole lot, aren't you?
We talked about values earlier. We were talking about garage sale values. Really,
fair, way market.
But fair market value sounds really fancy. The bottom line is garage sale value. Yeah. Oh, okay. Let's see, that's that. And then last thing is the deeds, okay? The transfer of the deeds, quit claim deeds for property, deeds for the cars, anything like that, you need to have those, okay? So that you have evidence of it done. It won't be legal unless that takes place. It just won't. You can say that that's what you want, but it has to be actually physically taken care of.
Now, how does it work, Scott, when you put something in, like, say in that, say our two vehicles are paid off, and say I made a trust and I put those in there and what I wanted to happen, what if, you know, for whatever reason, you buy a new car, do you add that new car into the trust?
Yeah, at some point in time, what you do is, well, okay, for instance.
So it's called amendments, right, when you're doing changes to it?
Yes and no. First of all, let's say you have two cars and they're paid off. Okay, what you will do ahead of time is you will go back to the county, the Department of Vehicles office, and you'll go ahead and transfer title, just as if you had purchased it. Only there's separate lines on the titles that explain what's going on, and you say you're transferring title, you have it into the name of the trust. So then, legally, with the state, your vehicle is not registered in your name, it's registered in the name of your trust, your family trust name, whatever that is, like the Smith Family Trust. Okay, it's registered that way. Then if you want to go ahead and trade one of those vehicles in on a new vehicle, you're doing it all in the name of the trust. As long as you have that trust document with you that's notarized, most all businesses, I can't think of any business in 10 nowadays that isn't familiar with that process. It's the trust trading in a vehicle and purchasing a new vehicle in the name of the trust.
Okay.
And what happens is it can be listed on there. You have a list at all times on your trust of different properties, okay? But as far as the state's concerned, it's legal too because it's in that name.
Okay. Trust get better value in haggling for prices on automobiles too, I heard.
I'm not sure about that.
Typically, because of the short-term ownership of cars, they advise you not to bother putting a car into a trust, but leave it to the pour over will.
Yeah, that's true. So unless you're I have a 65 Mustang. Classic cars, things like that. And I always keep that in my mind when I think about it.
If Mondo died and I don't have anything in place and I know I wanted to give it to my eldest, I could do that, right? Because it's paid out, both our names are on the title?
Right now?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
He's got a friend, his grandparents actually, before he died,
they went through a process, and it was in East Los Angeles where they actually gave, before they died, everything away so they could even get over and not even have to pay for all this.
Yeah.
And so before they died, I mean, they were pretty high up in years. They said, hey, guys, we decided we're going to go through this process that we heard about. And they gave it all away, and it was pretty much, you know, we're going to be taken care of, yeah, by this particular organization, but we're done.
Yeah. No, and that's good. Is it, the only thing that the only problem with that is in the gift tax.
Yeah.
Because when you're getting so much property, there's limits and there's caps on all of what you can value wise without the government start taxing you for the gifts. Mm-hmm. They tax you for everything.
They do. Yeah. Which state is most friendly
for this?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you moving?
No. I would put a presidency in Florida where there's no taxes.
I would tell you, like, for are you talking about for ease of estate, or are you talking about for taxes and things like that?
I was just Nevada. A general question.
Yeah. I for the ease of the estate part, when you said Iowa, you're pretty close. The Midwest takes this stuff a lot more, not lightly, but they're not as... Here's why you have problems in California, Florida, okay? New York, Texas is population, that's why. Okay, the smaller populated states don't deal with this as often, and so therefore they don't have as many problems as often. They're not always trying to address something and making it more complicated. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. And then you also have, because California and Florida in particular are warm weather states, and Texas, you have more elderly people there, mm-hmm. so you have a whole nother thinking that goes along with that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Alaska. So, yeah, there you go. Alaska. Yeah, exactly. And if you're there, I think it's Alaska. I don't know how many years it is, but once you become a resident for so long, you actually get a check cut for you.
Oh, you get
because
paid
the oil.
To live there. Absolutely.
Even if you live here, you can still. I know someone who lives here and is a resident here, still. And she still gets.
Okay, we may be doing that then. I didn't know that. That'd be worth it.
No vacation there.
It's anywhere from $1,000 to like $10,000 a year.
Yeah, it's a lot of money just for living there.
Well, and the seven.
Yeah, so I think John. Yeah, I think John's got that one.
Yeah.
Alaska. We'll come and visit on the salmon fish.
Oh, that's
funny. So, last thing here though is, and this goes back to what we've already said several times, is talk. Remember, don't start with the tools. God is not interested in how much you have to give. It's His anyhow. God is interested in why you're giving and how you're giving. The stewardship issue. So talk with your children or your other heirs when you have the opportunity to do this. You're encouraging them to be a better steward of resources. Educate them on this. You know, I want my children to know that while we are leaving them the money, it's not just for their gain. It's not just for their pleasure. Most people see an inheritance and automatically they think pachanga. It's just like, this is great, we've got this extra money to spend somewhere, as opposed to you could invest that somewhere. You can invest that in God's kingdom. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to give it away to invest in the kingdom, just in the things you do for yourself and trying to get yourself in a better place. Okay, let's say truly, there's nothing wrong with this thinking. You've got debts. You get money. You pay those debts off. But the purpose of paying those debts off isn't so that you can go in debt again. It's so that you are free from debt and you can serve the Lord. So that you can just serve the Lord with that extra time you have, that not that worry. Think about how much time debt takes up when we think about it, as far as just the worry and the stress. That by itself would be a wonderful thing, so long as you're serving the kingdom. That's what I'm talking about. Just think through, the whys, and explain these things to your kids. Get them and train them. So, answer to the question, how do you accomplish His will? Think like a steward, not like an owner. Use God's wealth to accomplish God's purpose. I'm going to skip this last group question because we pretty much talked about it. But I wanted to go to the conclusion real quick. A great poem. It's called The Bridge Builder. An old man walking on a lonesome road came through the evening cold and gray to a chasm vast and wide and steep with waters running cold and deep. The old man crossed in the twilight dim. The rolling stream had no fears for him. But he turned when safe on either side and built a bridge to span the tide. Old man, said a fellow traveler near, you are wasting your strength with building here. Your journey will end with the passing day. You never again will pass this way. You've crossed the chasm deep and wide. Why build you this bridge in eventide? The builder lifted his old gray head. Good friend, in the path I have come, he said, there followeth after me today a youth whose feet must pass this way. The chasm that was not to me, to that fair-haired youth may a pitfall be. He too must cross in the twilight dim. Good friend, I am building this bridge for him. And so this is the question. Are you building bridges, or are you just keeping your head above water? And I think that's where we're all at to some aspect, and in some aspect when we think about our finances and think about the future. We want to get to this point where we're actually building bridges for others, you know, in a scriptural sense, where we're giving them the opportunity to know the Lord, or we're helping and encouraging them in their relationship with the Lord, as opposed to being so focused on our financial situation and sucking the life out of us. Make sense? Okay. Any other questions? Before we close, wow, 5 weeks, that went by fast.
What books would you recommend?
What books I recommend?
I like
What Redfern Grows. John Abbondi, I don't necessarily...
John Abbondi?
Yeah, I don't necessarily... how do I say this? I like the ideas he has for the methods in getting out of financial problems. However, I don't necessarily agree with his reasoning all the time. Seems like there's more of a self-motivation there than a focus on the stewardship aspects of things. Mm. But I think that the concepts he has of going through and learning principles of how to pay debt off more quickly and those kinds of things are very good. I also, everything by Crown Financial, I just like. I think they're really solid. They've been around for a long time. Ron Blue is excellent when it comes to financial. You know, Larry Burkett's old books are still solid. Then there's just the whole philosophy of, you know, stewardship. Is it called the Treasure Principle? I think it's the Treasure. Is it Treasure Principle by Ray Alcorn? Yeah, Alcorn. So those.
And another quick question.
Yeah.
How do you approach your parents? I'm not sure if Carrie's folks have any type of trust. I mean, it's kind of weird going to your parents saying, you know, folks.
We tried.
You're going to be dead soon.
Yeah. And how do you...
That might not go over well.
Okay, here's a question. I honestly, my sisters and I believe that our parents have done a reverse mortgage on their house. We don't know. We don't have any facts on it. But I don't think they have a trust. And it's one of those, we're kind of like, you know, wondering if they die and all of a sudden we're going to be hit with, there's nothing there. No, we don't want anything, but we were hoping that would just pay for the funerals and, you know what I mean, any long-term care.
No, I think, honestly, and I just so you know, this comes up a lot. My grandmother would refuse to deal with it. My mom talked to her several times. I know somebody right now that's asked them to come to me to talk to them. They won't. It's not that they're being jerky about it. They just...
It's a generation.
I know. They don't like talking about it, but because it's a private issue. But by making a private issue, you fail to educate yourself, and therefore you fail to make wise decisions.
Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, you can incense them by talking about the government's cut. Being serious.
No, he's right. Yeah. You can. We begin to also... I always have started with the health part, not the money part. Like, what do you have in place for, in case you are incapacitated, but who do you want to make those decisions for you? Yeah, and then that leads into a lot of the financial stuff, naturally.
Okay. Yeah, healthcare power of attorney is a good conversation.
Great. And the taxes things is another really good one. Instead of approaching it like, you know, that's going to be our money, how are we going to get that? Approach it from the health part, and then also listen. I know that you want the best thing done with those finances. How would you like it handled? I mean, it's a stewardship issue. You don't want the taxes paid out, do you? I mean, really, do you? If you don't, what do you want us to do to make sure it doesn't get done? Mm-hmm. At least that'll broach the subject. If you get shut down, you get shut down. But
yeah, that's good.
Anything else?
There's another thing that I know. I was surprised that Mondo's parents had paid for it. They actually paid for the funeral already and the property. I've known the people by plots, and I know after my mom died, 6 months later, they came to see how I was doing, and at the same time, they sold us a plot, so we have started that.
That's good.
And I know I have nieces are like, that's morbid, you bought your land. And I said, well, you know, it's just something to not worry, because when my sister died, they didn't know what to do with her.
No, it's very, this is all good stuff.
And then right after that, my father-in-law gave Mondo his stuff, and come to find that he's actually paid for his property and the cost of the funeral. And I'm thinking, you know, it might be in Monrovia, which is far, but we can actually get it sold and actually transfer it, because the funeral will pay itself no matter where it's held.
Right.
It's the property part. And, you know, I was surprised because older Mexicans do not do that, but yet his dad had just told us, he goes, I don't want to leave a burden when I'm gone.
Then that's exactly what this is, part of this is about. Mm-hmm. Not burdening others, that's not good stewardship, and thinking, you know, what the Lord would you have you do with it? That's very good.
Costco sells very cheap caskets.
They sell everything. Oh
my uncle
gosh.
Lives in Northern California, and he found some caskets direct or something in L.A. and drove down in his van, got the casket, and drove it to Oregon. We took it home with him?
Yeah, his van.
Well, they put a sheet over it and use it for the dinner table.
Yeah. That's Costco also sells urns to keep ashes in.
Folgers.
I know someone in the church that they got a
same thing.
Mondo Ice coffee. There you go. You want some coffee? Honey, you're going on the fireplace. Folgers.
Well, there was some family I heard that, like, the grandparents got cremated and they kept them on this nice cherry wood box on the mantle in their bedroom. And I'm like,
that's when you see those movies where they drop it by accident. They're like, go to the fireplace, get some ashes, you know, put the ashes back in the box. Like,
yeah. No. Why don't we go ahead and close in prayer, since we're close. Okay? And let's see. Jody. That Jody. Can you close in prayer for us?
All praise to God.